Hong Kong Advanced Level Examination, Use of English, Section A, Listening Test, 2007. Instructions to Candidates. You should have on your desk a question answer book. Do not open it until you are told to do so. I repeat, do not open the question answer book until you are told to do so. Now write your candidate number in the space provided on page 1. Of your question answer book. Now check through your question answer book and make sure it has no missing pages. Look for the words end of test on the last page. Now stick your barcode labels in the spaces provided on pages 1, 3 and 5. You are reminded that all examination materials will be played once only. The test is divided into three parts. You should use a pencil to write your answers for all three parts. At the end of the examination, when you're told to stop, put down your pencil and close your question answer book. You may not leave the examination room until you are instructed to do so at the end of the examination session. Put your hand up now if you have any difficulties. The test is about to begin. Keep your earphones on until you are told to take them off. Now look at page 2 of your question answer book. Introduction. Situation. You are a new employee of a hotel group managed by an American company. Recently, a hotel run by the same company in another part of the world was the target of a terrorist attack. In order to educate the staff about safety and security, the company organized a terrorist awareness session at the group's hotel in Hong Kong. Senior security advisors Sue Lee and David Perrins conducted the session, and it was recorded by one of your colleagues. You should take notes and do various activities in the session materials booklet while listening to the recording. Part 1. In this part, you'll hear the advisors give some general information about terrorist awareness. You'll now have 2.5 minutes to familiarize yourself with the note headings for Part 1. At the end of Part 1, you'll have 2.5 minutes to tidy up your answers.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Sue Lee, and this is my colleague, David Perrins, who was once a Hong Kong police officer.
Morning, everyone.
Weren't you both involved in the Gordon case a few years back?
That's right, yes. PC Watson, isn't it?
Used to be. Now I'm in hotel security. A bit more specialised. Just call me John.
And my name's Shirley Holmes. I'm his supervisor.
Okay, and we'll find out who everyone else is as this session progresses. Okay, let's start right off with the reason we're all here. Have a look at these newspaper reports, which I've got up on the screen here, and which you'll find in your session materials booklet. One of these reports has particular relevance to us.
Oh, yes, the latest holiday attack. This targeting of tourists is really getting out of hand, isn't it? I think we all want to know what can be done to catch these people before they blow up anyone else.
Precisely, Mr. Watson. John. Which leads us to the first aim of this session. That is, we want to explain what you can do to fight terrorism, or, in other words, to make you more responsible. Most of us feel the same kind of anger as you do when we read about these things. But we all need to take more responsibility for security.
And that brings us to the second aim of the session, which is to improve your observation skills. Good observation skills are essential to good security, and we aim to tell you how you can keep an eye on what's going on in a more systematic way.
So, let's imagine you've spotted someone behaving oddly. What do you do then? That's the next aim, to provide you with a plan of action. That is, an action plan you can follow consistently, even though it may lead to nothing in the end, which is what happens most of the time, thankfully.
Finally, and perhaps most importantly, we aim to develop a pattern of behaviour in you. We want you to be able to function not just as a receptionist or a member of the housekeeping team or a waiter, whatever your job is. We want you to be an observer too. And that means developing a certain pattern of behaviour that improves security.
Yes, and we've come up with a staff security motto. It's, security is in the eye of the beholder.
Sorry, that should be beauty's in the eye of the beholder, shouldn't it?
Yes, we've changed it to suit the circumstances.
And beholder spelt B-E-H-O-L-D-E-R?
Well done, John. I knew you'd get there sooner or later. So, can anyone tell me what some of the general indicators of possible terrorist activities are?
Oh, I remember something in the newspapers around the time of the WTO conference in 2005. What was it now? Oh, yes, unexplained purchases. Somebody placed an order for 50 gas masks in an outlet shop in Mong Kok.
Well remembered. Unexplained purchases are a good example. They may not happen inside the hotel, but they could easily have something to do with a planned attack on one. Now, can anyone think of anything more specifically related to a hotel? I mean, what kind of building are we in?
Well, it's a public building.
Yeah.
And an unusual interest in public buildings could be another sign of terrorists at work.
Mm.
Well done, Holmes. Shirley, you've picked up on the second sign immediately. The key thing to remember is that it's an extended or unusual interest in public buildings. And while we're on the subject of the unusual, the next thing is you may find that you get unusual requests for information.
Unusual requests?
Yes, that's right. I mean, someone may ask, for example, whether there's CCTV in the corridors. One of the most significant indicators, however, would be evidence of dry runs.
Evidence of what?
Dry runs or practice runs. You see, terrorists seldom go through with a big operation unless they've practiced or rehearsed it. And it's during that rehearsal time that they're at their most visible.
Mm.
Now, there's one more thing that's typical of the kind of activity we're talking about, and it's something you might remember from your days as a policeman, John.
The use of fake or fraudulent IDs, Sue. I became quite an expert at spotting those, I have to say.
All right, John. Put your money where your mouth is. How do my credentials look to you?
Suspicious.
In what way? And for the moment, I want you to think about the written details only.
OK. Now, if you look at the passport number first, that's in the top right-hand corner, you can see that the one at the end of it is slightly higher than the other numbers. That's very clumsy, very poor workmanship. I should tell your forger to get his eyes tested.
Will do.
The next thing that's weird is the given name, Sue. Now, Sue's a short form, short for Susan or Suzanne. Someone from another culture might not know that, and short forms are very uncommon on passports. There's Sue again down at the bottom in the computer red lines. But don't bother to circle that one, there's no need. Wait a minute, though. What's that capital E doing there a bit further along the line? It looks a bit lonely, don't you think? As though someone accidentally forgot to cover it up. That's definitely worth circling.
You're doing well, John. Anything else?
Yeah. Still on the computer red lines, the second one to be exact. The first nine digits, that's 0 to 0, should be the same as the passport number, but they're not.
Okay, I'll circle those nine digits as well.
This passport was issued in 2006. You can see there, date of issue, 26 Jan 06. So it should be a biometric one, right? Well, that's bio, as in biology, and metric, as in...
Metric? Yes, I think I've got that. So, what's so special about it?
It's one where the picture is scanned onto the page. You know, scanned by a computer. Actually, it looks like something's gone wrong with the scanning. You look like something out of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Charming.
Also, all your personal details are stored on a microchip, a tiny little chip that you could fit under your fingernail. All your personal details, all in there.
That's very clever.
Now, the important thing about biometric passports is that there are new restrictions on the kind of photos you can have. Firstly, it's supposed to be a plain, light background. You've got a stripy background there. Shall I circle that?
No, just circle anything to do with the written details.
And you've also got a lovely smile on your face, but I'm afraid that's not allowed anymore. It's no smile from 2006 onwards. Also, your mouth should be closed, because they don't want to see your teeth for some reason. Finally, you've got hair falling over your left eye there. Very slinky, but they won't like that. Both eyes should be visible and no winking.
Very good, John. No smile, mouth closed, eyes wide open. Got it.
Oh, and there's another thing to circle on the passport. UK passports are only valid for 10 years. You've got yourself a 13-year one there. See where it says 26 Jan/Jan 19? I mean, honestly, your forger should be shot.
You are an expert, John. Everyone circle the 19 and we'll move on.
Now, if you have a look at the screen and in your training materials, you'll see two charts listing areas inside and areas outside the hotel that may be open to terrorist attacks. Let's think about the inside first. What do you think would be the least secure area?
I'd say the guest rooms. Obviously, you can't have cameras or surveillance in the rooms because of guests' privacy, so you have no way of knowing what's going on.
Mm, that's very true.
As a matter of fact, the guest rooms are fairly secure areas and should rank as 2 on the scale. They're only slightly less secure than the lifts or elevators are.
But the lifts are very public, aren't they?
That's true, but don't forget they have cameras in them. No, it's the public areas that are most at risk. I mean, the restaurants and the lobby area, with restaurants probably the least secure, because there are so many people moving back and forth. Oh, and the business centre, of course, should have the highest rating in terms of security, because there's always staff members monitoring what's going on.
Sure.
So, let's think about the outside areas of the hotel. And perhaps I could ask you, John, how you would rate, for example, the pool area in terms of security.
I'd put a 2 there, if you ask me. There are plenty of people around, but also plenty of lifeguards watching what's going on.
But would you say it was more or less secure than the gardens?
Why leave a bomb in the gardens? Something spectacular is what terrorists are after these days. You don't get that by blowing up a few trees and a bit of turf.
True enough.
Not really, no.
What about the service entrance? That might not be well protected.
But in most hotels, the service entrance is well away from the guest areas. So it would be better to place it in the middle of the scale in terms of security. What most terrorists aim for is something in the car park. Maybe a car loaded with explosives. But an even more high-profile attack would be an explosion in the drop-off area. This can maximize damage, and therefore the number of victims, including international tourists, to ensure it becomes headline news.
Okay. Let's have a closer look at the ground floor plan of this hotel. You can find it on the next page of your materials. Got it? As you all know, this floor is currently undergoing renovation, and many of the changes that are being made are related to improving security. Perhaps I can just run you through some of these changes, and you can note down what's happening and the reason why. Let's start at the drop-off area, which is the round part in the top left-hand corner. Now, let's imagine you've just arrived at the hotel. The doorman has opened the taxi door for you. You head up the steps. What's behind the glass to the left and right of the entrance?
Pot plants. Loads of them.
Yes.
Makes the lobby look quite jungly.
Yes, but I'm afraid they're going to remove the pot plants.
Remove them? What a shame.
I know. But the problem is, all those leaves make it very easy to hide bombs.
Oh.
Yep, the foliage provides perfect cover for them. Now, if you turn left after you come into the entrance, walk on and turn left again, you'll find yourself at the toilets or restrooms. I'm afraid those toilets are much too close to the entrance. It would be easy to leave something in one of the cubicles. And an explosion would not be too damaging if the toilets are at the back of the building, as they are in many hotels. But here they're much too close to the entrance. So they're going to relocate them.
Relocate them where?
Probably the basement. Now, if you come out of the toilets or restrooms, what do you have straight ahead?
The escalator to the second floor.
Yes, but before that, on your left, here and here.
Doors to the garden path outside.
That's right. Anyway, the problem is that there are too many entrances to the hotel. So the builders are going to fill in those doors.
Oh, I see. You want to cut down the number of entrances.
Uh-huh. Right down to the minimum. Bearing in mind that we do need a certain number of fire exits. All right. Let's turn around and wander back into the lobby. Now, as you're approaching the reception area, you'll see there's a wall on your left.
The one that runs parallel to the restaurant.
Uh-huh. The builders are going to knock down that wall.
What on earth for? It's one of the original features of the hotel.
They're going to knock it down because it blocks the view. I mean, the view of the restaurant. Soon, you'll be able to see the restaurant from the reception area, rather than have a security guard patrolling down the corridor as we do now.
I suppose visibility is more important than preserving the building's character.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Next to the reception area, you have the left luggage room. This'll be changed to offices.
Why is that, then?
The left luggage room is too close to the lifts.
Too close? Oh, right. Yeah, I suppose there's always a worry that someone will leave something in a suitcase in the luggage room.
Yeah. And you don't want the luggage too close to utilities like lifts.
Let's have a tea break and we'll reconvene in a short while.
That's the end of part one. You'll now have 2.5 minutes to tidy up what you've written. Part 2. In this part, you'll hear the advisers play 3 taped conversations, which include suspicious behaviour. You'll now have 2 minutes to familiarise yourself with the note headings for Part 2. At the end of Part 2, you'll have 2 minutes to tidy up your answers.
If you're all comfortable and refreshed, ladies and gentlemen, we'll start part 2 of our session. What we'd like to draw your attention to in this part is some particular kinds of suspicious behaviour you may encounter in the hotel. If you look at your materials booklet, you'll see you've got 2 tables on page 7 and a third one on the next page. What you have to do is identify the location where the conversations are taking place, and how the guest or customer seems in each exchange, what the hotel staff member says and does, and how the guest responds. Just think about the first 2 questions when the recording is played and try to listen for the main ideas. For example, if you think the guest sounds apathetic, you know, as if they don't really care, just put a tick in the box beside the word. After the recording, we'll run through the other parts together, and you can make more detailed notes. We recorded the conversations during the break with the help of some of our trainees, so you may recognize some of the voices. Ready? Here's conversation 1.
Hello. I'd like a room, please. Do you have anything at all?
For the next couple of weeks, I'm afraid we only have suites available.
Oh, that's okay. I'll have a suite.
They are a lot more expensive than the rooms.
There's no problem.
Okay.
No problem.
Well, the cheapest one's $6,100 a night.
Okay. Credit card do?
Credit card's fine. Thank you, sir.
Here you go.
Great. Just a moment. Thank you. Oh, sorry, sir. There seems to be some problem with your credit card.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just get another one.
Great. Thanks.
Oh, sorry.
Take your time.
Here, is American Express okay?
American Express is great, thank you. Yep, okay, no problem this time. Sign here, please.
This conference that's here at the moment, what's going on?
We do actually have 2 conferences running at the moment. Are you a conference delegate for one of them?
I am, yes.
Perhaps I could refer you to my business centre manager. She has more details on the exact conferences and where you can register and get your credentials.
Okay, thank you very much.
Can I get the bellboy to help you with your bag, sir?
No, it's fine. It's very heavy. I don't want to strain somebody's
back. No problem at all. They have trolleys.
It's okay, really. I'll take my own luggage. Thank you.
Very good, sir. Thank you. Okay. Enjoy your stay.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's think about the exchange. What does the staff member do first?
Oh, she explains that only sweets are available.
That's right. Very expensive sweets, to be exact. Oh, John, your spelling hasn't improved, I see. That's S-U-I-T-E-S. Not sweets, as in children's sweets.
Oh, yeah.
So what was suspicious about the guest's response?
Well, he's willing to pay for an expensive room, just like that. He doesn't even think about it. He's willing to pay anything by the sound of it.
That's right. $6,000 for a room is more than I can afford.
Me too.
That's for sure. Yeah.
And the next thing, she says the first credit card isn't working, but I'm not sure if that isn't some kind of trick. A second card with the same name on it would help verify his identity.
Good thinking, Shirley. And how does the guest respond?
He drops his wallet. At least that's what it sounded like. That shows he wasn't really very relaxed.
Okay. But lucky for him, he did have a second card in his wallet. What happens next?
The guest asks for information. He asks for information about the conference.
Uh-huh. And how does the receptionist respond?
She refers him to the business center manager. I don't know what her name was.
The business center manager. That's right. You see, this is what's known as an unusual request for information. And the receptionist politely diverts the questions elsewhere. Finally, the receptionist offers bellboy services to the guest. She suggests that the bellboy carry his luggage.
But the guest, well, he insists on carrying his own luggage. I mean, he really insists on it.
Mm.
That's very suspicious, if you ask me.
Very good. Okay, let's move on to conversation two, shall we?
Okay.
Good morning, sir. Can I help you?
I'd like a tour to Shenzhen, please.
Sure, we have three tours to Shenzhen, a one-day tour, 2-day and a 3-day tour.
All right. Maybe you can choose one for me.
Well, it really depends on what you want to do, sir, but I would suggest the 2-day tour.
The 2-day, that sounds fine. Yeah.
Okay, so when would you like to return?
Actually, I just want to go one way. Just one way only.
I don't think you can do that, sir. It is actually a return trip.
Ah, right. Okay. Well, just Saturday.
Okay, sir. I'll book you on that tour. A 2-day trip to Shenzhen, returning on Saturday. Oh, and this tour comes with a free travel pack.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, so if you can give me your credit card, please, sir.
Here you are.
Thank you. Right, that's fine. Enjoy your trip.
Right, yeah, thanks.
Oh, sir, don't forget your travel pack.
Okay, that's the end of conversation two. What about the exchange here? Again, a lot of interesting things happening.
Well, to start with, the agent offers a range of tours. 3, if I remember rightly.
Yes, you do.
But the customer asks her to choose one for him. That's really odd, asking her. I mean, it's as if he isn't really interested in them at all.
Well, spotted, Shirley. Anything else, John?
Yeah, after the customer has chosen, she asks when he wants to return. You know, when he wants to return to Hong Kong. And rather strangely, he says that he wants to go one way only.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he does say that. Just the one way.
Yeah, very peculiar.
Finally, the agent gives him a free travel pack.
Yeah, and the guy leaves it behind. He accepts it, but didn't take it with him.
Yeah, which is a very common thing when someone is focusing only on one element of what they're doing.
So it could be an escape route, you mean? A one-way ticket to Shenzhen and a flight from there to who knows where.
Yeah.
Speculation, Watson, but based on some evidence. Now let's have a listen to conversation three.
Hello. I want a table, please. That one's fine.
I'm sorry, sir. Within the restaurant, we do require that you wear a tie.
Why must I wear a tie?
Just for the other guests.
I'm a guest in this hotel, and I don't have a tie with me.
Right. Now, what would you like, sir?
That, please.
Right. Set menu A.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, that comes with a steak, sir. So please tell me, how do you like your steak cooked?
It doesn't matter. Whatever, yeah.
Sure. Let's stop it there a moment. Now, obviously, we're dealing here with a problem customer. So initially, what we can say is that the waiter reminds the customer about dress code.
Yes, and the way the customer reacts, well, you know, he actually challenges the waiter.
You're right. He does challenge him. Next, the waiter asks how the customer wants his steak cooked, as steak is obviously part of the set menu.
I like my steaks done well, burnt round the edges.
All right, John, but the customer doesn't specify how he wants his steak. Perhaps he doesn't know how they're cooked. He'll get a nasty surprise if he likes his steaks well cooked and it arrives rare and bloody. Okay, let's join our mysterious diner at the end of his meal. Sir, what would you be requiring for dessert?
I'll have that, please.
That meaning the dessert platter?
Yes.
I'm so sorry, sir. That dessert platter is only for set menu B, which is for two people.
Yes, that's fine. Could I have the bill, please?
Sir, have you finished with your soup?
Well, the soup's cold, and this steak is raw.
I'm sorry you found it that way, sir. I thought you didn't matter how your steak was cooked. Anyway, let me explain about the soup. The soup is prepared cold. It's a special soup dish called gazpacho.
Well, can I have my bill, please?
Sure. Right, sir, the total for your bill today is $600.
Here, I only have a $1,000 note.
That's fine, sir. I'll be back with your change momentarily. Where did that customer go to?
He just walked out.
But he's left $400 in change. He never picked it up.
Well, it's your lucky day then, isn't it?
Oh, great.
Okay, perhaps I can just quickly list the last few details of suspicious behaviour this exchange illustrates. These are namely, the customer orders food but doesn't eat it. Sounds like he's not even touched the steak from what the waiter says. And secondly, the customer doesn't care what he orders. He asks for a dessert platter from a set menu for two people, a different set menu from one he's already ordered from. And finally, he pays, but he doesn't wait for his change. Like the tourist who left the travel pack behind, the customer leaves his change. What was he doing in that restaurant? He obviously wasn't interested in eating anything.
That's the end of part two. You'll now have 2 minutes to tidy up what you've written. Part 3. In this part, you'll hear the advisers talking about possible signs of terrorism outside the hotel. You'll now have 2 minutes to familiarise yourself with the note headings for Part 3. At the end of Part 3, you'll have 10 minutes to tidy up your answers for the whole paper.
Let's think about suspicious activity outside, but within the vicinity of the hotel. In some ways, Hong Kong offers advantages to terrorists, but in other ways it can be disadvantageous, by which I mean there are certain difficulties it presents for terrorists. For a start, because of limited space, very few hotels are set back from the road with long driveways, as they are in many other parts of the world. And as a consequence, terrorists can easily get pretty close to a hotel. Also, because the streets in Hong Kong are so busy and dynamic, it's easy for terrorists to blend in with the crowd.
Yes, but that's only if you're on foot. If you're in a car, it's a different story. There are very few parking spaces on the street, so drivers tend to be quite exposed if they stop to observe activity around their targets.
Don't the police usually give a ticket to illegally parked vehicles, Mr. Perrins?
Not if there's someone in the car. The police usually just move people on. They seldom record details.
That's right. One thing which does help us is the fact that most streets in Hong Kong are pretty narrow, especially compared to other big cities. If somebody tries to double park, I mean if they park alongside another parked car, the chances are that they'll block the road, and the last thing a terrorist wants is a lot of angry drivers stacked up behind him, thumping their car horns.
That said, there are no hotels in Hong Kong I can think of that have security checkpoints. So if a terrorist actually wants to commit an act, say a suicide car bombing or something, it's often easy to drive right up to the entrance without being stopped.
Parking in the hotel grounds is a different matter, of course, because most hotels here have valet parking.
Sorry?
You know, valet parking, when a hotel staff member takes over your car and leaves you with a ticket to collect it later. Valet parking means you can only get access to your car through someone else.
This leads us neatly on to suspicious vehicles. That is, any car which you see at the same place, at the same time, but on different occasions, and with people inside it.
Yes, and the important things to note down here are, where was it parked? Was it near the drop-off point, on the opposite side of the road, close to the service entrance? Now, the next thing to note is, what time did you see it? And by that I mean the hour and the day. Thirdly, you need to ask yourself, is there any pattern to its movements? Or, in other words, does it appear on the same days at the same times? Terrorist activity is often characterised by particular patterns. And the fourth thing to note is how many people were there inside the car. Noting the number of people could be very useful if a search takes place later on.
So what further signs are there to look for? One thing to look out for is cars where no one gets in or gets out. This would indicate that watching or observing is the main function of the car's occupants. You should also look out for cars with unusually dark or tinted windows. Some vehicles you can't even see inside. Another thing you should regard as suspicious, especially if you are one of the parking staff, is drivers testing security.
I'm not sure I understand you.
Well, terrorists will sometimes deliberately drive a car into a restricted zone to see if they're stopped by security guards. They're testing the security to see how effective it is. One further sign is poor driving. This may be related to the driver not being used to having the steering wheel on the right. Most countries have left-hand drive, you see.
Yep, now let's think about specifics. And we're assuming here that you're able to get close enough to the car to see what's going on inside it.
I know all about that stuff, Miss Lee. Basic police training.
Good, then you'll be able to tell us how to label the car on page 10 of your materials.
It'd be my pleasure. Let's begin with the front of the car and the license plate. The first two letters there, they tell you the year of registration.
Yes, so you need only write year in the space.
OK, and then those two arrows pointing to the doors, well, they'd be indicating body type, that is, whether it's a two-door or four-door vehicle. The arrow pointing to the rear or back of the car, I guess, is suggesting that the model is important. I mean, the car could be a hatchback or a saloon, an SUV.
Thank you, John. I think model will suffice.
Right. Sorry. Anyway, the arrow pointing to the roof is drawing attention to special features. This might be a ski or a bike rack, or maybe a sunroof. Yeah, they're all special features.
You missed something out?
Yes, sorry. Possibly the most useful one. Those jagged lines on the bonnet or hood of the car, they're probably scratches. So any indication of damage should be noted down. It may not be scratches, it might be a dent or a broken headlight. And you've forgotten one thing too.
What's that?
Okay, look at the circle on the rear door. Imagine that's a smiley face. So let's draw two dots for the eyes and then a curving line for a smile. That's it, Shirley. You've got it. And now write unusual markings in the space where the arrow starts. Good. And by unusual markings, I mean any signs or logos or stickers or whatever may be on the car. They're a help too.
Very good, John. But let's focus on the passengers. What sort of telltale signs do you think you should be looking for with the passengers?
Okay. Well, obviously people taking photographs would be a dead giveaway.
Indeed. Anyone with a camera inside the car would look mighty suspicious. Can you think of anything else?
Well, I guess people using binoculars would also be up to no good.
Binoculars, yes. And for your benefit, John, that's B-I-N-O-C-U-L-A-R-S.
Yeah, thanks.
Any use of vision-enhancing equipment should be reported. And there's one more thing. Something that tourists are often seen carrying.
Maps?
Well done, yes. But it's not the maps that are suspicious. It would be people making notes on maps.
Oh, making notes. I get you.
All right, let's finish with a few important do's and don'ts you should remember when you observe suspicious activity. First and foremost, do not take direct action. Confronting the individual, disturbing them in the middle of their activities, These things all constitute direct action and can put you in extreme personal danger.
Yes. What you should do is record and report. That is, record as many details as you can and report it to the hotel security chief.
Record and report. Gotcha.
Good. This leads me on to the second don't, which is don't show your suspicions. Keep them to yourself. Don't let them know you've got your eye on them.
That's right. What you should do is act normally. Just behave in the same way you do every day. We don't necessarily want to put these people off. We want to catch them in the act, or preferably, at the planning stage.
Indeed. And a final don't, and perhaps this is one you might not have thought about, don't let your personal feelings interfere.
I'm not sure I understand.
What I'm trying to say is, ignore your personal feelings. Don't let your preconceptions about what terrorists might look or behave like make you think something suspicious is going on when, in fact, nothing is going on at all.
Yes. What you need to do is remain objective. Look at the whole situation before you make a judgment about whether an individual or individuals have evil intentions.
Okay. And that, as they say, is that. Okay, and remember the motto, security is in the eye of the beholder.
That's the end of part three. You'll now have 10 minutes to tidy up your answers. During this time, you'll hear a piece of classical music. Keep your earphones on until you hear the announcement at the end of the 10 minutes. That's the end of the test. Stop writing now and put down your pencil. Close your question answer book and leave it on the desk in front of you for the invigilator to collect.